Escuelas oficiales de idiomas de la región de Murcia. Pruebas específicas de certificación. Comprensión de textos orales. Nivel C2. Convocatoria, septiembre 2019.
Task 1.
Now, when you were a young child, did you dream about the family you'd one day have? I know I did. I think I wanted 11 children at one point. Our next guest also did. She's Stephanie Ward. She's a senior writer for the Sydney Morning Herald and the Good Weekend magazine. As a child, Stephanie was always told that she would have a Prince Charming, a few junior royals, and maybe even a white picket fence, or maybe a palace even. Now, welcome to Life Matters, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Tell us a bit about your personal story. What motivated you to write this article?
Oh, goodness. It's been brewing in my head for some years now, I think. I've known for a while that it was very unlikely that I would have a child. And it's been on my mind, and personal essays are such the currency of so many magazines these days, and I know that they do so terribly well online. And I'm approaching a big birthday, and I've been talking to my editor about what I should write maybe ahead of that. And we thought of all sorts of, well, I thought of all sorts of rather silly ideas, like I was going to go out and have every anti-aging treatment known to man ahead of the big birthday and see what, you know, write about that. And my editor said, no, you need to focus a bit more, focus. Mm-hmm. And really, there was only one story to write, I think, once I started to focus on it. The burning story, I think, yes. Yeah. And so about 3 months ago, the process started, and it's been such an emotional ride, shall we say. And interviewing some of the women I spoke to as well, whose stories are so similar to mine. Mm. And the response to the story, which was published in Good Weekend on Saturday, has been I'm reeling.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. Now, this number of 1 in 4 is a big shift from 1 in 10. Where did you find this number? It all hinges on this very number.
Yeah, it's an Australian Bureau of Statistics estimation. It's quite difficult, and I'm no statistician, so I can't give you the nitty gritty details about the numbers. But it's based on women in their reproductive years now. 24 to 25%, mm-hmm. And it's even higher in the States. I think it's over 30% in the US, now, which is extraordinary.
Tell us about what people say to you when you say that at your age you don't have children.
I have to be honest, I've been very lucky. My family's never put pressure on me. People generally, I don't know whether it's the people I know, but generally they don't put a lot of pressure on me. But I shrink into myself when I'm asked the question if I have children. And people don't have, I've been very fortunate, people haven't had the ugly responses that I've heard from other women. So many women I've spoken to in the course of doing this story have to put up with such a lot of rubbish. One person who emailed me told me of a friend of hers who's, I gather, had Italian family, and that might have been the reason, very conservative. This woman moved overseas to get away from the pressure that she was facing. So it, I think it's much more extreme in, for some people than it has been for me.
Yeah. Did you expect to have a family, and why?
It was just what you imagined would happen. You know, I was a child of the 70s, and it was what people did. So, and that's another thing that's come through in people's commentary to me, that it, you didn't, some people didn't even think about it much. You just assumed that it would happen. So it suddenly it becomes very, well, not suddenly, over a slow creep of time, it becomes an extraordinary matter. Hang on, how did this happen that I'm suddenly in this position? How did I get here? I often would tell people I wanted to have enough kids to have a football team, because it was just me and my brother, and I always felt I wanted more children. And so I'd tell people, oh, yeah, I want to have a football team. And I had a vision in my mind of children on either – I love to cook, so I had this vision of a table, long table with happy children's faces on either side, and a golden retriever by the fireplace, and a beautiful man down the other end of the table. And silly young girls, we build these fantasies that don't come to life.
Was there a turning point when you realised that there was no option, or that, that –
Now, when you were a young child, did you dream about the family you'd one day have? I know I did. I think I wanted 11 children at one point. Our next guest also did. She's Stephanie Ward. She's a senior writer for the Sydney Morning Herald and the Good Weekend magazine. As a child, Stephanie was always told that she would have a Prince Charming, a few junior royals, and maybe even a white picket fence, or maybe a palace even. Now, welcome to Life Matters, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Tell us a bit about your personal story. What motivated you to write this article?
Oh, goodness. It's been brewing in my head for some years now, I think. I've known for a while that it was very unlikely that I would have a child, and it's been on my mind, and personal essays are such a the currency of so many magazines these days, and I know that they do so terribly well online. And I'm approaching a big birthday, and I've been talking to my editor about what I should write maybe ahead of that, and we thought of all sorts of, well, I thought of all sorts of rather silly ideas, like I was going to go out and have every anti-aging treatment known to man ahead of the big birthday and see what, you know, write about that. And my editor said, no, you need to focus a bit more, focus. And really there was only one story to write, I think, once I started to focus on it.
That and was the burning story. Of,
it really was the burning story, I think, yes. Yeah. And so about 3 months ago, the process started, and it's been such an emotional ride, shall we say. Just and interviewing some of the women I spoke to as well, whose stories are so similar to mine. Mm. And the response to the story, which was published in Good Weekend on Saturday, has been, I'm reeling.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. Now, this number of 1 in 4 is a big shift from 1 in 10. Where did you find this number? It all hinges on this very number.
Yeah, it's an Australian Bureau of Statistics estimation. It's quite difficult, and I'm no statistician, so I can't give you the nitty gritty details about the numbers. But it's based on women in their reproductive years now, 24 to 25%, mm-hmm. and it's even higher in the States. I think it's over 30% in the US, which is extraordinary.
Tell us about what people say to you when you say that at your age you don't have children.
I have to be honest, I've been very lucky. My family's never put pressure on me. People generally, I don't know whether it's the people I know, but generally they don't put a lot of pressure on me. But I shrink into myself when I'm asked the question if I have children. And people I've been very fortunate, people haven't had the ugly responses that I've heard from other women. So many women I've spoken to in the course of doing this story have to put up with such a lot of rubbish. One person who emailed me told me of a friend of hers who's, I gather, had Italian family, and that might have been the reason, very conservative. This woman moved overseas to get away from the pressure that she was facing. I think it's much more extreme for some people than it has been for me.
Yeah. Did you expect to have a family, and why?
It was just what you imagined would happen. I was a child of the 70s, and it was what people did. So that's another thing that's come through in people's commentary to me, that some people didn't even think about it much. You just assumed that it would happen. So it becomes very, well, not suddenly, over a slow creep of time, it becomes an extraordinary matter. Hang on, how did this happen that I'm suddenly in this position? How did I get here? I often would tell people I wanted to have enough kids to have a football team, because it was just me and my brother, and I always felt I wanted more children. And so I'd tell people, oh, yeah, I want to have a football team. And I had a vision in my mind of children on either – I love to cook, so I had this vision of a table, long table with happy children's faces on either side, and a golden retriever by the fireplace, and a beautiful man down the other end of the table. And silly young girls, we build these fantasies that don't come to life.
Was there a turning point when you realised that there was no option, or that you-
Task 2.
Zero.
Bohemian Rhapsody is coming to theaters next weekend. This biopic follows the iconic rock band Queen and covers the growth of their band, the evolution of Freddie Mercury into a global star, and the years that led up to their legendary performance at Wembley Stadium during Live Aid in 1985. Now, admittedly, I did not grow up as a huge fan of Queen. I did like their music. It always pumped me up as intended during sporting events, and their music is the first thing that comes to mind when thinking about the Wayne's World movies, but I didn't follow them closely, primarily because they were just before my time, and rock and roll was never my music of choice. I knew of them. I knew the nuts and bolts details about their rise to stardom, and I can remember seeing many clips of Mercury on stage, so as an outsider to the fan...
One. We have is worth it for Bohemian Rhapsody, but you bring up the story about Queen, and yeah. And this my issue with this movie is that I like the movie, and I hope that people see this movie and pick up instruments or want to be singers, but I do feel like it was sugar-coated is a little too strong,
yeah.
Superficial is a little too strong, but a lot of the beats of this movie felt like a VH1 made-for-TV movie. They did a Def Leppard one on VH1 10 or 15 years ago. It felt like that, and especially during the Queen moments. This movie is trying to tackle an impossible task. So if you say, hey, Christian, I'm going to give you a movie, and you have 2 hours and 10 minutes runtime, I think this movie did as much as it possibly could have.
Yeah.
But it never felt like it got too deep under the surface, and that disappointed me a little bit.
And I don't disagree with that point. It didn't bother me. I think that there were times I was invested.
Two.
You know, we seen things in the movie, and I learned stuff in the movie. And I'm gonna be honest with you. When I left the theater, I felt some type of way. And I felt like, I don't want to ruin the film, but watching Freddie Mercury interact with his family, I wanted to be a better father. I wanted to be a better father. I have a daughter and a son. And when I saw his family, I was like, I wish things could have been different for this man. And I want to be a better daddy. Like, I want to be a better father to my kids now. You know what I mean? Put a little extra in there. Maybe if I could just give a little more to my kids. Maybe just a little more. A little bit more of me. And I felt that in this movie. I don't know why I did that, man. I don't know why I felt that shit. I felt it, though.
Three.
Jim Beach, all part of that. So it's dealing with that whole thing while making reference to different songs that are on the Night at the Yacht Brat album. We then have Somebody to Love. We deal with We Will Rock You. A lot of people were worried about the We Will Rock You thing, about the that it's set in the wrong time. It is, but you kind of see why they've had to do that to fit it into the story. We then deal with We Are the Champions, Don't Stop Me Now. Fat Bottom Girls, that's not right in the timeline, but when you see it, you'll realise, no, yes, that fits. You'll not be upset about that. There's even reference to Bicycle Race. Another One Bites the Dust, we see that. The Crazy Little Thing Called Love, Under Pressure. The Hot Space era of things, when things were going a bit rocky. We see the Mr. Bad Guy album in this. The Love of My Life, Live in Rio. The timeline in that's completely wrong. But when we see it, you think you can forgive that because it explains things, because it's referring to Mary Austin and Freddie's relationship with that, which we'll look at in a minute. Then we'll Radio Gaga, I Want to Break Free, Hammer to Fall, Who Wants to Live.
Four.
Kind of throwback at the end, but it was very on the nose humor and very self-referential. I just don't think it was quite successful. So ultimately, I was moved. I was stirred by the end of this film. I felt something at the end of this film. But I think that had less to do with the film itself than it did with Queen and Freddie Mercury, the real-life versions that crept into the film. I was left wishing that this film was as revolutionary and as groundbreaking, as brave and as bold and as brazen as the subject itself. And instead, we're given a competent, perfectly good, standard biopic that goes beat by beat by beat as a very standard, very safe biopic of its kind does. So in saying all of that, I will say on quality of film, I would probably give this a solid matinee.
Five.
I'm gonna give it a catch it if you can. But
that's not.
I'm
a
sorry,
movie.
Catch no, it.
It's a movie.
That's
title.
A movie. Sorry. I was gonna say check it out.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I was gonna give it a check it out. Oh. Then that ending hits and the build up to the ending, and I'm like, oh, this is gonna be good. Oh, and it just satisfied me completely, and I'm like, catch this movie opening night.
Yeah, I mean, see it opening night.
See it opening night. See catch it opening night.
I don't.
We're
even
gonna have to work on our rating system.
Oh, well, I think it's catch it opening night. Yes.
Yeah, I like it.
You guys, I am obsessed with this movie. On the drive home, I made Justin listen to Queen the entire way home. I did consult you. I was just like, this is what we're listening to.
Okay.
Because I was in the mood, but this was. I think this definitely makes my top favorite, I don't have a number yet, but top favorite movie of 2018, and this, for me, is definitely...
0.
Bohemian Rhapsody is coming to theaters next weekend. This biopic follows the iconic rock band Queen and covers the growth of their band, the evolution of Freddie Mercury into a global star, and the years that led up to their legendary performance at Wembley Stadium during Live Aid in 1985. Now, admittedly, I did not grow up as a huge fan of Queen. I did like their music. It always pumped me up as intended during sporting events, and their music is the first thing that comes to mind when thinking about the Wayne's World movies, but I didn't follow them closely primarily because they were just before my time and rock and roll was never my music of choice. I knew of them, I knew the nuts and bolts details about their rise to stardom, and I can remember seeing many clips of Mercury on stage, so as an outsider to the fan...
One.
We have is worth it for Bohemian Rhapsody, but you bring up the story about Queen, and yeah. And this my issue with this movie is that I like the movie, and I hope that people see this movie and pick up instruments or want to be singers, but I do feel like it sugarcoated is a little too strong,
yeah.
Superficial is a little too strong, but. A lot light. Of the beats of this movie felt like a VH1 made-for-TV movie. They did a Def Leppard one on VH1 yeah, like 10 or 15 years ago. It felt like that, and especially during the Queen moments. This movie is trying to tackle an impossible task. So if you say, hey, Christian, I'm going to give you a movie, and you have 2 hours and 10 minutes runtime, I think this movie did as much as it possibly could have.
Yeah.
But it never felt like it got too deep under the surface, and that disappointed me a little bit.
And I don't disagree with that point. It didn't bother me. I think that there were times I was invested.
Two.
You know, we seen things in the movie, and I learned stuff in the movie. And I'm gonna be honest with you. When I left the theater, I felt some type of way. And I felt like, I don't want to ruin the film, but watching Freddie Mercury interact with his family, I wanted to be a better father. I have a daughter and a son. And when I saw his family, I was like, I wish things could have been different for this man. And I want to be a better daddy. Like, I want to be a better father to my kids now. You know what I mean? Put a little extra in there. Maybe if I could just give a little more to my kids. Maybe just a little bit more of me. And I felt that in this movie. I don't know why I did that, man. I don't know why I felt that shit. I felt it though.
Three.
Jim Beach, all part of that, so it's dealing with that whole thing while making reference to different songs that are on the Night at the Yacht Brat album. We then have Somebody to Love. We deal with We Will Rock You. A lot of people were worried about the We Will Rock You thing, about that it's set in the wrong time. It is, but you kind of see why they've had to do that to fit it into the story. We then deal with We Are the Champions, Don't Stop Me Now. Fat Bottom Girls, that's not right in the timeline, but when you see it, you'll realise, oh yes, that fits. You'll not be upset about that. There's even reference to Bicycle Race. Another One Bites the Dust, we see that. The Crazy Little Thing Called Under Pressure. The Hot Space era of things, when things were going a bit rocky. We see the Mr. Bad Guy album in this. We see Love of My Life, Live in Rio. The timeline in that's completely wrong. But when we see it, you think you can forgive that because it explains things, because it's referring to Mary Austin and Freddie's relationship with that, which we'll look at in a minute. Then we'll Radio Gaga, I Want to Break Free, Hammer to Fall, Who Wants to Live...
Four.
Kind of throwback at the end, but it was very on-the-nose humor and very self-referential. I just don't think it was quite successful. So ultimately, I was moved. I was stirred by the end of this film. I felt something at the end of this film. But I think that had less to do with the film itself than it did with Queen and Freddie Mercury, the real life versions that crept into the film. I was left wishing that this film was as revolutionary and as groundbreaking, as brave and as bold and as brazen as the subject itself. And instead, we're given a competent, perfectly good standard biopic that goes beat by beat by beat as a very standard, very safe biopic of its kind does. So in saying all of that, I will say on quality of film, I would probably give this a solid matinee film. It is.
Five. I'm gonna give it, I'm gonna give it a catch it if you can. But
that's not a movie.
Sorry, catch it.
It's a movie.
That's a movie. Sorry. I was gonna say, check it out.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I was going to give it a check it out. Oh. Then that ending hits, and the build up to the ending, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. Oh, and it just satisfied me completely, and I'm like, catch this movie opening night.
Yeah. I mean, see it opening night?
See it opening night. See catch it opening night.
I don't
We're going to have to work on our rating system.
Well, I think it's catch it opening night, yes.
Yeah, I like it.
You guys, I am obsessed with this movie. On the drive home, I made Justin listen to Queen the entire way home. I did consult you. I was just like, this is what we're listening to.
Okay.
Because I was in the mood. But this was, I think this definitely makes my top favorite, I don't have a number yet, but top favorite movie of 2018. And this, for me, is definitely...
Task 3.
Hey everybody, Stefan Molyneux, hope you're doing well. So, this article caught my eye, I wanted to go over it with you guys. YouTube's top creators are burning out and breaking down en masse. And the general mantra is, this is all I've ever wanted, why am I so unhappy? Now that is a fascinating question. So many people want to be famous, so many people want to be prominent, so many people want a public persona. And imagine, of course, that the praise, the criticism, the attention, the money is going to make everything in your life better. It is the great lure of fame and prominence to imagine that everything is great. Now, it doesn't seem to matter how many times we see, you know, famous, rich, beautiful, talented people kill themselves or get divorced or become addicted to drugs or have their children go off the rails and have a generally miserable existence. It doesn't really seem to matter. This idea, this goal, this fantasy that fame is going to make you happy, that popularity is going to make you secure is, it's a very dangerous delusion and something which isn't really talked about as much. So the article by Julia Alexander, this is on Polygon, is talking about how this guy Bobby Burns, he's a YouTuber with just under 1 million subscribers. I guess, you know, it's funny, I never really think of myself as a YouTuber. I think of myself as a philosopher and so on, but not a YouTuber. But I have almost 800,000 subscribers. I have 500 million views and downloads. And so, yeah, I guess I'm in that category, which is why, also, I guess, why I wanted to talk about this. So this Bobby Burns sat down on Rockin' Central Park to talk about a recent mental health episode. Elle Mills, Canadian. She has more than 1.2 million subscribers. Uploaded a footage that included vulnerable footage during a breakdown. Ruben Gunderson, the third most popular YouTuber in the world with just under 30 million subscribers, turned on his camera to talk to his viewers about the fear of an impending breakdown and his decision to take a break from YouTube. Eric Phillips, 4 million subscribers, Benjamin Craner Vestergaard, 2.7 million subscribers, have either announced brief hiatuses from the platform or discussed their own struggles with burnout. Ah, PewDiePie, the great PewDiePie, 62 million subscribers to Jake Paul, have dealt with burnout. And there is, you know, there is this algorithm that is like the physics of what you do and what you try and navigate. And it really is like trying to drive at high speed blindfolded, because obviously YouTube does not reveal the nature and details of the algorithm that helps promote your videos and get you new subscribers and get you views and so on. And so you are trying to navigate when things are not only obscure, but I think constantly changing. And if your views go down because there's been an algorithm change, do you look in the mirror and say, I'm doing terribly, people aren't interested, it's all over? If your views go up because of a change in the algorithm, do you think that you're just naturally gaining success and so on? It's like trying to play baseball when they constantly dial up and down the gravity. It's a pretty wild phenomenon. So yeah, there are changes to the platform. And of course, there's massive competition. Like out here in social media land and YouTube land, there's massive competition. You know, like back in the day when you were running a show, like a television show or whatever, a news show, well, you were pretty much the only game in town, or maybe there was another game or two in town. But like when I grew up, there were basically two channels, BBC One and ITV. There was BBC Two, but I think that was just a tax write-off. Hey everybody, Stefan Molyneux, hope you're doing well. So, this article caught my eye, I wanted to go over it with you guys. YouTube's top creators are burning out and breaking down en masse. And the general mantra is, this is all I've ever wanted, why am I so unhappy? Now that is a fascinating question. So many people want to be famous, so many people want to be prominent, so many people want a public persona. And imagine, of course, that the praise, the criticism, the attention, the money is going to make everything in your life better. It is the great lure of fame and prominence to imagine that everything is great. Now, it doesn't seem to matter how many times we see, you know, famous, rich, beautiful, talented people kill themselves or get divorced or become addicted to drugs or have their children go off the rails and have a generally miserable existence. It doesn't really seem to matter, this idea, this goal, this fantasy that fame is going to make you happy, that popularity is going to make you secure, is, well, it's a very dangerous delusion and something which isn't really talked about as much. So the article by Julia Alexander, this is on Polygon, is talking about how this guy Bobby Burns, he's a YouTuber with just under 1 million subscribers. I guess, you know, it's funny, I never really think of myself as a YouTuber. I think of myself as a philosopher and so on, but not a YouTuber. But I have almost 800,000 subscribers. I have 500 million views and downloads. And so, yeah, I guess I'm in that category, which is why, also, I guess, why I wanted to talk about this. So this Bobby Burns sat down on Rock in Central Park to talk about a recent mental health episode. Elle Mills, Canadian. She has more than 1.2 million subscribers. Uploaded a footage that included vulnerable footage during a breakdown. Ruben Gunderson, the third most popular YouTuber in the world with just under 30 million subscribers, turned on his camera to talk to his viewers about the fear of an impending breakdown and his decision to take a break from YouTube. Eric Phillips, 4 million subscribers. Benjamin Craner Vestergaard, 2.7 million subscribers, have either announced brief hiatuses from the platform or discussed their own struggles with burnout. Ah, PewDiePie, the great PewDiePie, 62 million subscribers to Jake Paul, have dealt with burnout. And there is, you know, there is this algorithm that is like the physics of what you do and what you try and navigate. And it really is like trying to drive at high speed blindfolded, because obviously YouTube does not reveal the nature and details of the algorithm that helps promote your videos and get you new subscribers and get you views and so on. And so you are trying to navigate when things are not only obscure, but I think constantly changing. And if your views go down because there's been an algorithm change, do you look in the mirror and say, I'm doing terribly, people aren't interested, it's all over? Like, if your views go up because of a change in the algorithm, do you think that you're just naturally gaining success and so on? It's really, it's like trying to play baseball when they constantly dial up and down the gravity. It's a pretty wild phenomenon. So yeah, there are changes to the platform. And of course, there's massive competition. Like out here in social media land and YouTube land, there's massive competition. You know, like back in the day when you were running a show, like a television show or whatever, a news show, well, you were pretty much the only game in town. Or maybe there was another game or two in town. But like when I grew up, there were basically two channels, BBC One and ITV. There was BBC Two, but I think that was just a tax write-off.
Fin de la prueba.